Hi, I'm Becca Lewis, your host for the Shift the Story podcast, where we share tips and tools for making shifts in our lives from the inside out. I'm very excited about bringing you this podcast. It's the first in the series about the months of the year. It may sound like, oh yeah, so what? But if you listen, you will be surprised how many tools for shifting perception, and therefore your life, you will find contained within each month's secrets. Dell shares story after story from the Seneca Indians, the Bible, quantum physics, numerology. I couldn't keep track. And even though I was there, I will have to listen over and over again to get all the gems. Did you know that July is about love, the color yellow, and seeing the impossible? Yes, and that's just the beginning. Come with me and learn about July as we shift the story together. So we're talking about July today, and we always talk about the rhythm of the month. So can we start with that? What is the rhythm of July?
Okay, the rhythm of July is love.
Ooh.
And it's love in truth.
Okay.
So that's the rhythm, it's love. And the number seven itself is symbolically meaning completion.
Okay.
Yes. And in Twyla Nitch's book, she talks about the seventh world, and it's called the seventh world of completion. That's the name of the world.
That's the name of the book or the world?
Of the world.
The world, the seventh world of completion.
Because according to the Seneca traditions, and there's seven worlds that we go through. We're in the fifth world now, and the seventh world will be the seventh world of completion. And interestingly enough, in that world, she says the linear time will disappear. There will be no more linear time.
Hmm.
And what's even more interesting about that is the physicists have proven that when you go the speed of light, a clock actually stops. And there is no more time.
So symbolically, the seventh world would be we were aware that we are light and living that way?
It would be something like that.
There no time.
Yeah, and again, incomprehensible to human thought because human thought can't get there. But
I think we're getting there because we're letting go of human thought.
As you let go more and more of that, it becomes more and more evident as to what is true.
Okay.
So yeah, the rhythm is the love and truth, and the title is the lover, the conqueror. In the Seneca tradition, it's the lover and the conqueror.
But normally, you wouldn't say lover and conqueror go together.
No, you wouldn't, would you?
No. So what does that mean? They can't mean the way people think that means.
Well, the lover and the conqueror, that. You love in truth. When you base everything on the purity of what pure love is, perfect love, it conquers all, anything there is. And then what are you conquering? What is the fight? The fight is really just about ignorance. It's fighting ignorance. And ignorance is anything that thinks it's separate from what is oneness of everything.
So actually you're fighting the illusion.
Yes.
Well, you're not really fighting it. You're fighting the belief of the illusion.
Yeah, more like fighting a belief.
Yeah.
The illusion.
Because when you fight the illusion itself, then it makes it real.
Well, that's what most of us are doing anyway, is fighting an illusion. And it feels real.
Definitely feels real.
And then in July, so what it does in July is you have that point of view that you are at the seventh spot, and you have the stability and the essence of love and truth, and how it's expressed or lived in the world is the opposite side. So you draw that line from the seven over to the one. So you live it through learning the truth of seeking and doing.
So when you say opposite line, you mean over in January?
Yes.
So you say that again for me?
So you come in as number seven, as the July. So you are... the essence, the stability of who you are is love in truth, the lover, the conqueror. How it's expressed and lived in the world is through the January aspect of things, which is learn the truth through seeking and doing.
Seeking and doing.
Yes.
Well, I like that. It's kind of like that. If you seek, you shall know.
Mm-hmm. And then some of the other qualities of the rhythm of seven is they confront obstacles. So okay. You face the obstacles. You don't try to hide from them. You face the obstacles, which from the aspect of pure love, you know, that starts to dissolve the obstacles. But if you never face the obstacles, if they're never brought to light so they can be seen, then you never know what they're doing. Living on the surface of things, so to speak.
Okay.
It's about preserving truth. It's about persistence and being devoted.
Well, yeah, I was thinking as you were saying that. So we're doing the rhythms of each month, and we've talked about that. It doesn't mean that's all you are. If you came, you know, if you were what we think is born, but up here in July, that's not all you are, what we're talking about. We're all in the center of the circle. We all include all of it. It's just this is symbolic. Mm-hmm. Of July. And I thought, you know, one of the things that's really wonderful about doing it this way is that each month we get to really focus on something within ourselves to really become more skilled at it. So here we are in the month of July becoming more skilled at just taking this as a trigger, in a sense, to become more skilled in love or conquer.
Yes.
And understanding. Clarity.
It brings clarity and understanding and awareness to all these things. Because as Twyla used to say, when you do a clarity vision quest, what that is merely isolating yourself to a place where you can really think about each month. And each month is like an aspect of yourself that you're becoming very clear about. And then you keep going around that whole circle and understanding what each place is. And then when you hit a stuck place, a place where you go, oh, I'm having a hard time right there. With seeking and doing, or with learning the truth, or with seeing the truth, or hearing, or listening, then you realize, okay, that's where I need to focus and concentrate on more, and think about.
Right.
To get unstuck from that. So because the whole idea is to be circular in thought. Circular in thought is more spiritual thinking, obviously.
Exactly. Which brings me to, I know there's a lot more here, but about what you're talking about, but you talked about the circle being the circle is being turned in, a line being turned into a circle. I couldn't get that straight.
Oh, right. Well, the material senses support the material state of mind, obviously.
Right.
You know, the sensory perception using the five senses, that supports the material world. Mm-hmm. You have to go to a deeper place within to find that essence of spiritual sense. It's not found on the surface. And that's why the material state of mind really cannot have a spiritual revelation. Only spirit can have spiritual revelations. I mean, you have to be in that deeper sense of things.
Okay.
Listening within, coming from that within place. So the seventh world of completion that Twyla was speaking of, there was what she called the seven talents, which was really just an idea of a rock formation that is able to express past and historical records, so to speak.
Okay.
And the material viewpoint, we think of the material viewpoint as written in stone. And so when you confront that particular thing, you think about, well, a comforting material statement is, well, it's not written in stone. And
right.
yet what is true about that is
it is written in stone.
Because we always look to measure everything, measure the history of the earth and everything else in that idea. So when we're measuring the material world, it gives that substance and reality. The more we measure it, the more real it becomes to us.
Uh-huh.
Now, the most precious measuring device we have is really the clock.
Right.
It's because we're always
measuring time.
And always looking at it. Everybody's trained to look at the clock. What time is it? What time is it? Keep looking at the clock. And keep, how about now? What time is it now? So we're always looking at that, and it gets us to focus our attention on that constant ticking of the clock.
Oh, I hate ticking clocks.
It's constant attention on that. And if you look at it, the clock is circular, so there's the illusion that, wow, it's complete because it's circular, and it's
right.
got all 12 numbers. Oh, therefore it must be spiritual. Well, it is spiritual. On the surface, it looks very spiritual. It has all 12 numbers. So, yeah, there's a completion in the idea that 12 is a spiritual number, a holy spiritual number. The circle is about spiritual altogether. And then, but the foundation of the clock itself is steeped in linear thought, material thought.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's an illusion that is not really spiritual. And the more we keep looking at that clock, the more we really are thinking of linear thought.
Well, that comes back to what we're always talking about, that you have to look at what your premise is.
Yeah.
And your intent. So if the premise is to measure materiality, no matter what the symbol looks like, it's still not, it's not a spiritual essence.
Right.
So, but you could look at a clock from a spiritual point of view as giving you a symbol of spirituality, which is what we're talking about the numbers.
Yeah, the 12. So when you think of the 12, now you can look at the clock at any given moment and go, oh, it's 1 o'clock. Oh, wait, that's learn the truth.
Right.
It's through seeking and doing.
Yes.
What am I seeking right at the moment?
Uh-huh.
What am I doing at the moment? Am I learning the truth through my activity right now? Do I understand the truth? So, therefore, now it is wholly spiritual.
Yes.
And it's, well, what is the truth right now? What am I seeking? What am I doing? So you can do that. So now it's 7 o'clock. Oh, 7 o'clock, completion. Completion of what? How am I loving in truth right now? Mm-hmm. What am I conquering? What are the obstacles that I'm seeing?
Mm-hmm.
What are the obstacles I'm not seeing? What am I missing here? So you can do that questioning, and that is what Twyla refers to as the Clarity Vision Quest. So, yeah, now the clock becomes something different. Now it becomes a very good spiritual tool that you can use all the time.
I love Twyla's idea of a Clarity Vision Quest.
Mm.
And you were talking about the thing that she taught her granddaughter, which I thought was a great story. I mean, Twyla learned from her grandmother.
Yeah.
And I got that backwards.
I was going to say, I don't recall Twyla.
He just rolled his eyes and went, what?
I don't recall Twyla telling her granddaughter
well,
when she taught her.
Well, there's no time. What can I say? I saw Twyla as the grandmother, but in this story, she's the child.
Yeah, she's the child. Well, when she was 6 years old, her grandparents were teaching her some things because she was getting ready to go to Buffalo at a school. They were going to displace her.
Which they did to all Indian children.
They did to all Native
time.
American
at 6
children.
Years old, they took the Indian children away.
Took them away and made them live someplace else.
Yeah.
And she had to go live with a strange family. And so she hadn't left yet, of course. She was 6 years old, but her grandfather was on the porch, and he asked her if she would like to make a strong thong out of leather. And she said, yes. So he handed her this piece of leather and some scissors and said, okay, go ahead. She cut a couple strips of it and then tied them together. And her grandfather took the leather and gave it a quick yank, and it pulled right apart. And he said, okay, would you like to know how to make a good, strong leather thong? And she said, yeah. So he takes the scissors and the leather, and he starts cutting from the outside and makes a circle, just keeps cutting round and round and round until it gets right into the middle. And then opens right up, and he's got this real long thong, and it's very strong. He pulls on it, it doesn't pull apart. So she was quite fascinated with that, so she made one just like that. Then he called her grandmother out on the porch and asked her to make one, so she made one. He then took the 3 thongs.
Because he had made one.
Because he had made one, yeah, that's why I say he cut that first
one.
Oh,
okay. Oh, that's right.
And so he took the 3 thongs and he showed her how to braid them together and make it so they would lie flat as he braided it together. And then he took the end and he made a hole in one of the thongs on the end, and he put the other 2 through it so that it would not come apart. And he did the same thing to the other end. And he handed the finished product to Twyla and said, here, this is your rope now. But be clear about it, it's all symbolic. They taught very symbolically.
Mm-hmm.
So they each had made a thong, and he braided them all together, and he put those ends like that so that they wouldn't come apart. And that became her rope.
Okay.
And he said, here's your rope. Now, how would you use this rope? And she said, well, I could use it as a headband. And bear in mind, she's 6 years old. I could use it as a headband, and I could put it around my waist as a belt. He said, that's 2 uses for your rope. Okay. And then the grandmother, he said, now, how would you use your rope? And she stood up, and she started to pull an imaginary rope from the middle, from her midsection. And Twyla said you could really see it. It looked like there was really a rope coming out the way she was doing this. And it was going down, and then she reached down and grabbed an end of it and started to roll it into a ball and it got, you could just see this getting bigger and bigger the way she was doing it. And then she took the ball and threw it out into the field and held one end of it as it, she threw it. And then she looked down, she dropped it and looked down, and she could see this line that probably looked, it was the rope. Mm-hmm. And she followed this rope into the field and then turned around and came back. And the grandfather said, oh, that's how you use your rope. Now see there? What that rope is the connection to your inner truth. And this is how you keep a hold of it, and you use it, and you can always find your way back.
Mm-hmm.
So he taught Twyla that idea of you can do that.
Uh-huh.
So Twyla tried it, and she threw her ball out, and they all got a real big laugh, because as she went out to start to walk her truth rope, she tripped over the line and fell on her knees. So the imaginary rope tripped her up a little bit. So, but then it progressed from there, because they kept teaching her about this thing, and she had dreams. It had included all the colors, but she dreamed of shoes, and she dreamed of her rope. At first, the rope was chasing her. And she told her grandmother the dream, and her grandmother said, okay, now the rope is nothing you need to be afraid of. The rope is your truth line. So you keep a hold of your rope, and there'll be nothing to be afraid of. And she had dreamt of shoes in each dream. She had a series of four dreams, I believe. And each dream had three shoes in it. They're different colors. Mm-hmm. And so she told, well, and they were the color of the 12.
Okay.
Because each one, just like this month, this July, number 7, the color is yellow, which is the color of love.
Huh?
The warmth of the sun, the
yeah.
light. So, and so she had dreams like that, and her grandmother deciphered each dream. And the final dream she had three shoes in it, but they were all covered with mud. And the grandfather said, okay, the other dreams, they kind of chuckled at, because they were kind of humorous, and, you know, it was just a nice teaching lesson for her. But this one, he was a little concerned. He said, now, you must keep your shoes clean. Otherwise, you'll cover up the truth, and you'll cover up who you really are. So always keep your shoes clean. If you see mud on them, clean it off. So again, very symbolic.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the final lessons he gave her was, he asked Twyla to get her rope, and he said, now go get your puppy. She had a puppy, a brother dog, a cat, and a mother dog. He said, go get your puppy. So he took the puppy and he tied the puppy up to the rope and tied it to a stake. And the puppy is pulling and pulling on the stake, you know, on this rope with this rope around its neck. Pulling and pulling and pulling, finally got tired and laid down and started panting. He said, okay. So he let the puppy loose. Said, now get your brother dog. Call your brother dog over here. Did the same thing to the brother dog. And then, you know, kept pulling on it. The brother dog did the same thing as the puppy. You know, resisting like crazy, trying to get away from that stake. So he let that dog loose. He said, okay, now get your cat. She went and got her cat, did the same thing to the cat. And the cat did the same thing. It pulled and pulled and had, was very frustrated about the whole thing. And then he told Twyla, he said, now you're going to run into people like that where you're going to go to school. He said, some will be like the puppy. It'll be very friendly and very caring. Some will be like the brother dog, who are, you know, a little bit older and bigger and maybe a little pushy and, you know, obnoxious and that kind of thing. And then you'll have some like the cat who may not just be friendly at all. And Twyla said, well, right there, I thought, oh, I don't think I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh, but you already made the choice to go. Now, bear in mind, they didn't look at things like, oh, look what's happening. It is like when we come into this place, if we come in as number 7, that idea of that love in truth,
mm-hmm.
we hold on to the essence of what that is, and the lessons that confront us, that stare us in the face, we chose that so we could learn a lesson about that in order to dissolve it and let it go.
Mm-hmm.
If we never see the error that's in front of us, we'll never get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be just like redundant and nothing will really resolve itself. So they were very aware of, in order to grow and learn and be the essence of what is pure truth, you have to allow error to surface and deal with it and confront it and dissolve it through truth and understanding.
Well, one of the things I really love about that story is there's many things, but I love how they taught her and didn't
throw her to the wind, so to speak. It's like this terrible thing is happening to you, but gave her no tools. But the other thing I really love about it is they said you chose it. And in the context of what they meant by that, I think that was, how could they give her a bigger gift? Because when we say to people, well, that happened to you, we take away all their choices and all their sense of an ability to make a difference in that situation. And then they start blaming other people and never confront or overcome the obstacle. But when they gave her that choice that way, they gave her a way to overcome everything that was going to happen to her.
Yes.
Even though there was no conscious memory of any choice, even if you don't believe she had a choice, they told her that she did. Yeah. And that means she went into that with this awareness, I can do something here.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than being a victim. Yes. And then spending your whole life blaming other people for the quality of your mm-hmm. life. Which is more of a jail.
What can I learn here? I've got, what am I going to see here and be aware of what you're seeing?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, armed with the tools of, you know, just like the rope, and it was braided together with the essence of the three people.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the message was, we're always together. We're
yes.
always here. And the truth within rope, you know, that's your essence inside of yourself. It's always there. And then the rest of that story goes that he then asked Twyla to call the mother dog, and they tied the mother dog, and the mother dog did the same thing. And he said, now the mother dog represents more of the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to learn, and you're going to teach also. But he said, then the other thing to look at is, notice how the dogs pulled away, the dogs and the cats all pulled away, kept trying to pull away. He said, that's what people do. They always try to pull away from the teachings and the truth.
Yeah.
They always are lurching to try to get away from that. And he said, what you want to do is stand right in the stake of truth. Stand right on that stake of truth. So that's kind of like the standing at the stake posture in Chinese Qigong, you know. When you're standing there, what you want to do is align your posture up perfectly and pay attention to being very rooted in that place.
Right.
Instead of pulling away from it, going, we think freedom is about what we can do out there in the world, and it's usually not. It's not that at all, is it? Yeah, it's not that at all.
It's how you are within that is the mm-hmm. freedom.
Exactly.
I just read a quote, and I wish I remembered who wrote it, but he said that being rich is when you have money. Being wealthy is when you have time. And I think a broader version of that is being wealthy is when you have that awareness within, because then you have all the time and you have all the abundance.
Yeah.
Rather than just money, which is not freedom. So that's kind of what you're talking about.
It is what I'm talking about. And that when you have, you said that state when you have time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have time when you are the essence of what is light, because light, there is no time in light.
Exactly.
So therefore you have it all.
Yeah.
Since you there's no time, then of course you have all there is.
Which is wealthy.
Infinite.
Yeah, exactly. All there is. So, and then we narrow it down to this little tiny, oh my gosh, I don't have enough money for shoes or something.
Yeah.
Something absolutely ridiculous. Because, again, I just really love that lesson that they taught her. Again, because we say it's somebody outside of us that's causing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the economy's bad. My cousin was mean to me. A rock landed on my head when I was 10. There's always something outside.
Yes, and it is. We've been trained to focus on that and then do that thing.
Yeah. Instead of just going, but within, I've been free forever, and no one can mm-hmm. ever not take that away from me, which is what they taught her.
Yeah, and yes, and the teachings were about be responsible for, I chose this.
Be responsible for what you're thinking and what, how you're acting.
Yeah, and what we don't see is, you know, it's like that beginning place we have. We don't think we chose that because, you know, you just happened and there you are.
Yeah.
You know, because you were conceived and then you're born. Well, there you are. Okay. But no, we chose that particular moment. Twyla's always said, you chose your parents, you chose your place, you chose everything. You don't like it? Well, look at the lessons that are being learned.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as again, it's when air is brought to the surface and seen for what it is, that's when you can dissolve it.
Well,
if you're fighting the air all the time, like, why is this happening to me?
Right.
You're not going to see what it is.
Yeah, and what we're saying is this whole idea of coming within is really a story we've told. And the symbols that we're talking about are the symbols out of the story. So we've kind of like we sat down and we wrote a script with ourselves and said, okay, I'm going to go in, I'm going to have, this is my script, this is what's going to happen, this blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And if when we refuse to recognize that we wrote the script, we can't let go of it so that we can return back to home where the only thing going on is light.
Right.
Yep. And all the rest of the story just dissolves away into a much bigger expansion of anything we could have ever written. And we can't really say why we did that or why it appears that we did that, because then that just takes us off into some red herring thoughts and
sure does.
And doesn't really allow us to let go of it so we can return home. Because right. Who cares why at this point? Just how do we lift the veil?
Yeah, we can why it forever.
We could why it forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And a good trap. Why? I don't know why. I'll never be able to say why. I don't think anybody can say why.
Mm-hmm.
But we can say this is the way, this is the exit.
Yeah.
You can say that.
And, you know, and another fascinating thing about that light thing, and again, physicists are showing this, that, you know, we really think that if we're not present and looking at something, it's still there. It's still like the universe. If we're not, you know, if we're in bed sleeping, well, we might be thinking, well, the universe is still out there. And physicists say, no, it isn't.
No.
The only thing that makes it out there is in here.
So our observing and thinking of it the way we always observe and think of it. So we can actually shift that observation and thinking in an instant, and the out there is
different. It can, but have we been trained to do that?
Oh, heavens, no.
We've been trained just the opposite, so that's why we fight it. It's like the dog on the leash. We're always trying to pull away from that. That can't be, because I've been taught, of course it's real. This is real. This out here is real.
Yeah.
And so you pull away from what is truly, purely the truth.
Within.
It's all within.
There is a line back to
it. And
within.
The more you're shown without and shown that that's the truth, the more you don't want to see what's within, and you don't even bother going there. You think there's nothing there.
And you think it's a waste of time.
A waste of time. Because you've been taught, well, did you get anything done? What time is it? Come on, let's go. You're on the clock, buddy. Come on. And then another thing about the light, if you're going the speed of light, they said if you go almost 99.9% of the speed of light, something like that, the universe shrinks. They call it aberration, but they said it literally actually shrinks, so it's only a few steps across.
Isn't that crazy?
So again, so if you're going the speed of light, there is no material world.
Exactly.
The universe.
Just goes
not,
away.
It's gone. It's not
gone.
There.
Mm-hmm.
So very interesting.
So why we spend so much time trying to figure out what's not there is kind of silly. So... But
well, the more we measure it, the more we say it.
There
so
we
let's
go.
Let's measure away.
No, thank you. I still have to learn this stuff. Thank you very much. So our five senses measure the small R reality, and we're working on the big R reality and uncovering signs and symbols to bring us back to that idea, to that truth.
And that's the thing. Everything out there is a symbol. It's all symbols. It's all. And so the symbols, as teachers, show us what is spiritual and what is real.
So the month of July is also in a new season. Last season we were in the season of adoption, but now we're in the season of clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that's kind of nice, because you know the sun color yellow, and it's July. It's like Twilight said, that's when the peacemaker showed up with the Iroquois and the Senecas, or the whole Iroquois Confederacy, where the peace league was made with the five leagues, Iroquois and the peacemaker showed up at that time of year, because the corn was knee-high.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I always say knee-high by the 4th of July, you know, that kind of thing. And it was interesting enough, since this has just happened, yesterday, the full eclipse?
Oh, yes, last night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. I'm saying that for those of the people who know where they were last night, which was the 21st.
Yes.
Of July at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, the full eclipse of the sun began.
Yes. Fullest of the century.
Fullest of the century.
And that's when it was the full eclipse, when the peacemaker showed up and started the peace league.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Yes, indeed. Isn't it?
And from that, those of you who are listening who are part of the Women's Council know why we are giggling at that one. So that's the outgrowth of the Peace League.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's very exciting. So the other thing I love about July is just the number 7.
So yes.
It always was one of my favorite numbers. And then when we started researching for this call and looking up all the 7s everywhere from every teaching through the revelations, every single cultural teaching is swimming the symbol of 7, just swimming in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but first you were saying it's completion, but not necessarily, it's not spiritual completion, it's...
Right, see, 12 is a holy spiritual, or 7 is, it could be a spiritual completion, or it could be a negative, bad, evil completion, but it's completion, regardless. So it's just like in the Bible, 7 years of famine, mm-hmm. 7 years of plenty,
mm-hmm.
completion either way.
Yeah.
It's a completion. So in that idea of that, that's why 6 comes up one short of being complete.
Yes.
But 6, that doesn't mean 6 doesn't have, we talked about 6 last month. It's, of course, there's essence, it's
number.
Stability, it's
mm-hmm.
all that. But when you're just referring to the idea of completion,
mm-hmm.
well, that's all it means. And that's, when they talk about the number of man, 666, it's just 3 times you come up short of completion.
Mm-hmm.
And completion of who a true individual is. And then just like Revelation, you have 7 with the dragon. I mean, 7 heads with 7 crowns. I mean, it's a complete evil sense of something right there.
Right.
That's all.
So Revelation is filled with 7s.
Filled with 7s. To the brim.
7 churches, 7 spirits, 7 stars, 7 angels, 7 lamps, 7 eyes, 7 seals, 7 silences, 7 trumpets, 7 thunders, 7, just 7, filled with 7.
Filled.
And then you told me some other ones I never knew, like 7 spots on a ladybug.
Well, I want to finish, there's a couple in there because I think it's kind of interesting. Twilight in her lesson said the lesson for the 7 is gratitude.
Gratitude, okay.
Now, gratitude, it's just like, we have the 7 steps to shifting, and that the 7th
step is celebrate with gratitude.
Celebrate with gratitude.
Yeah.
And in Twilight's Pathway of Peace, you have the 7 stepping stones, and the 7th one is protection, healing, and gratitude. So it's about gratitude. It's being grateful for that. And the 7, it was just like in Revelation, in the one place where was it? The 7th angel, it was said in the days of the 7th angel, when he should begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that complete understanding of what exactly is God in spirit and truth. It's finished, it knows, because that's complete. And then there was the silence at after the seal, the 7th seal, when in the right hand of the one enthroned was the scroll that was sealed with 7 seals.
Yes.
So when that 7th seal of error was unsealed and opened, that's when there was silence, which is another very significant thing because the noise is over.
Oh, so that's what they mean?
Now,
I think a lot of people would say when it was open and there was silence, it was like a horrible silence, like, oh no, that kind of silence. But actually what it was is the noise was over.
The noise is over. It doesn't mean the battle's over. The battle's actually just beginning.
Yeah.
Because now all air has been exposed. But the noise is really over. And how you can confront everything is more through that inner silence. Again, when you go back to Don Juan talking about that. Any native tradition talks about that inner silence. Twilight used to talk about it all the time. So, yeah. Okay, yeah, then there's a lot of other things to deal with 7. Let's talk about some of them.
Because they were amazing how
they're,
many there are
interesting.
7.
Yeah, you said there's 7 spots on a common ladybug.
Yeah.
So it must be a complete bug.
And other bugs are not. Yeah.
Something like
they're
that.
They're very cute.
And with a few exceptions, all mammals and birds' necks have 7 bones.
Wow.
There's some information.
Uh-huh, yeah. That nobody probably knows.
And how about this? There are 7 viruses, according to the Baltimore classification.
7 viruses.
So okay. There's the bad part.
Well,
right?
Wait, the seven plagues.
The seven plagues. There you go. And the natural pH value between acidity and alkalinity, 7.
So it's right in the center.
Right in the center. And the number of daughters of Atlas in the Pleiades, 7. 7 sisters, they call them. And what else? Oh, here's an interesting one. Over many years, total quality practitioners gradually realized that a large number of quality-related problems can be solved with 7 basic quantitative tools, which then became known as the traditional 7 tools of quality. Did you know there was such a thing?
I had no idea that there were quality practitioners, period, let alone the 7 tools of quality.
Yeah. And the tools, I don't know what these things are. I'd have to look them up sometime and see what they are. Ishikawa diagram, Pareto, I think, chart, check sheet, control chart, flow chart, histogram, scatter diagram.
7.
7 things. Tools. So.
Yeah, 7 tools. Like the 7 steps and the 7, mm-hmm. Twilight 7 steps.
And on the clock, here's interesting enough, on the clock, on digital clocks, they call it, it's a 7-segment display. In other words, there are 7 little segments on those things that make each number.
Uh-huh. So if you have an 8, you have 7.
Yeah, an 8 covers all of them, but there's still only 7 little segments in there that make up that 8. So it's another one of those things. 7 hills of Rome, 7 liberal arts. There's something called the 7 sages, 7 wonders of the ancient world. And then when we look at Christianity, of course, there's the 7 days of creation. And we said that 7 years of famine and plenty, 7 days of the Feast of the Passover, 7-day week. And the fall of the walls of Jericho on the 7th day after marching around the city 7 times. And you said something interesting.
That made me think about when I had been thinking about this today anyway, and then you brought up that they marched around the walls of Jericho 7 times, and I thought about the follow-up story to that. So the idea was that the walls fell down, their protection fell down. And when they were building it up again, as they were building it up, they were kept being called to come down, to which basically they were kind of on a hill and the come down was coming down in the valley. But symbolically, they kept being called, come out from there and come down and meet with us, mm-hmm. Because the enemy's plan was to destroy the walls again. And this time they said, no, I won't come down. And how symbolic that is when you have started to find the truth,
yeah.
of one, of unity, and you've begun to build that protection of awareness around you, there are people or places or things that will continue to call us to come out. Come down here. Come back
exactly.
Where you came from. What do you think you're doing? So and that gets more and more panicked as the walls start to build up of that protection. So it's just something I have remembered a long time, that when you're being called to come down to error or evil or whatever you want to call it, the answer is no, I won't come down.
Yeah, it's like the 7 messages, mm-hmm. to the churches. I mean, each one is about overcoming this particular thing. And those with an ear to hear will hear what that is. And once you've heard it, once you understand it, don't go back there. It's
don't
like
go.
You,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you don't want to go back into that house.
Well, the message, the call is very subtle, though.
Mm-hmm.
So often it can be, you know, well, it can sound like you are a bad person, in quotes, because we're not people, but that's another issue. But you're bad because you won't come down and speak and work things out. Instead, you're standing in truth. But the idea is that when you stand in truth, when you've overcome each one of those issues represented by the 7 messages, then you've opened the door for anybody who wants to come and join you. The mm-hmm. door is open, the environment's ready, that you're holding that awareness of truth of that. So the door is open for people to come up, but going down is not a choice for someone that wants to stay in that protection of spirit.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right, what else? 7 loaves multiplied into 7 baskets.
Yes, so he only had 7 loaves of bread, and after stating the truth, which very, you know, roundabout in my own words, said, thank you for always hearing me. So mm-hmm. basically saying, thank you, I know that you're always present. I know that abundance is always present. But he said it, I'm going to say it out loud for the people because he had to say out loud what he was thinking. And after he, without any hesitation, he wasn't afraid of what appeared to be lack. So he didn't have to wait for them to water, get the seeds, plant it in the ground, get the wheat to grow, harvest the wheat, and then make the bread. He had to feed the people right then. So he had seven. So to me, the seven loaves is a complete idea of what abundance is.
Right.
And then he shared that complete idea with the people. And there was so much completion left over that there were seven
of surplus.
So everybody ate, plus they had plenty left over.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had, in that moment, all of them. I really think that when he said, I say this out loud for others to know, he was bringing them all into that awareness in that moment of everything provided in that moment.
Yeah.
So, which appeared as loaves and fishes.
Right.
But it didn't matter what it was.
Mm-hmm. That's what this is about, because, you know, that reminds me of the of what they talk about out in the universe, or what we think is the universe, is really just waves of probability.
Right.
And we keep thinking we have, you know, it's just like that fellow in the biocentrism book gave the example of, you have a cat, and you say, okay, I ask you a question, where's the cat at? And you think, okay, it's either in the living room, or it's not,
mm-hmm.
or it could be halfway, like in the doorway, so half of it's in the living room, maybe half's in the kitchen.
Right.
So we've got three possibilities. That's it.
Yeah.
No other possibilities.
Right.
Where they're saying we have to think it's an infinite. It's infinite. So the probabilities are infinite. It's not just three. But we've been trained to think, oh, you've only got a couple of choices.
Right. Well, and that idea of that it's not there unless we observe it, which means know it or think of it, means that if we understood that there was infinite number of probabilities, every time we observed anything, it could be closer to our complete awareness of what God is, rather than the same that we keep observing it the same way. But if we sat and really understood what we were looking at, and we talk about turning it into qualities, if we really sat and looked at everything and said, this is a quality of God, all that's present is God only.
Mm-hmm.
So every time we saw the lamp again, it was be a little more awareness of what a lamp really is, and a little more beautiful, a little more reliable, a little more secure, whatever it was we were looking for.
Yeah.
Because we would be moving out into all the multiple probabilities, which all lead to perfection of the one.
Right.
So we would do that. And then because we were talking about this today, it also makes me think of the little exercise that we give in the shift called the Six Impossible Things Before Breakfast exercise. And the idea from Alice in Wonderland was that we have no ability to imagine. And the queen says to Alice, I always do this before breakfast. I imagine six impossible things. And so we do that in the shift community, practice that every once in a while for fun. And the inability for our mind to conceive of anything, because as soon as and how small or impossibility things are. So it takes some practice to really think of six impossible things. And
stretch
then,
it out.
And exactly, that's what it is. It's the stretching out. And then some people resist this exercise because they say, well, nothing is impossible. Of course, they've already narrowed themselves down to like three probabilities. But in this exercise, that is what we're saying, nothing is impossible. Yeah. But you have to stretch out into it. And what's really fun about the whole exercises, people stretch out into them. It seems absolutely impossible, and often when we do this exercise, down the road they look back at their list and go, what? This happened. It was impossible. But it trains us to think out of the three probabilities
exactly.
into the massive amount of possibilities and probabilities. It's just a stretching exercise, because you can't see what you aren't willing to see.
Yeah.
So when you start doing six impossible things before breakfast, you become willing. Well, I'm willing to look. I'm willing to look outside my little door and see that maybe chickens will fly tonight when the moon is blue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it sounds silly, but but it's fun, silly, because it really. It's a game that we could play more often and change our lives.
So it expands the understanding of mind right there.
It does. I've had people say, I remember a woman who wrote, who was going through a horrible lawsuit, and she wrote in there just the most impossible thing she could think of was that the lawsuit would be over in everybody's favor. Okay, so a lawsuit over in everybody's favor immediately? I mean, that sounds impossible right there. Mm-hmm. But within a week, it was over in everybody's favor. And we all went, oh, yeah, oh, go. So because the law of good is that is in action, mm-hmm. I think that's the point we often forget to stress, is that there is omnipresent good. So if we would allow that law to work instead of thinking we are in charge and we are the behavior modifiers of the world, then we would allow good to be as us. And imagine what that would be like if all right. there was. If we allowed ourselves to live in omnipresent good, because that is all that's going on.
Yeah.
So that was my excitement about the six impossible things before breakfast.
I like that. Okay, should
maybe we should make it seven impossible things.
Maybe you should.
Maybe we should.
Might as well have a completion in that idea. Yeah. So we can go on to some other little things, other things that, like Hinduism has what they call seven rounds in a Hindu wedding. They have seven reincarnations. They talk about seven seas in the world, seven chakras. In Islam, it's the...
And what is the seventh chakra?
What is the seventh chakra? I don't know. The crown?
Yes.
Yeah. So oh, that's right.
The completion, yeah.
The completion. Top mm-hmm. it off.
Top it off.
Okay. In Islam, there's the seven number of doors to hell is seven, the seven fires in hell,
completion, good
number
or bad.
Of levels of earth, and the number of heavens. So, you know, there's that completion again, heaven, earth, there's completion there. Judaism, that talks about a lot of things. I don't know some how to pronounce a lot of these things, but one of them is the number of times Cain will be avenged by God if he is murdered. They talk about the days of Jericho there, the seven blessings are recited under during the Jewish wedding ceremony, 7 days of Passover. The Jubilee year comes after seven times 7 years. So that has a lot of things there. In other things, the number of archangels, according to some systems, the minor number, symbol number of yang in the Taoist yin yang, which I didn't know that. Number seven is a particular significance to the Cherokee cosmology. In Buddhism, Buddha walked seven steps at his birth. Hmm. I didn't know that.
Symbolic.
Symbolic, yeah. And in the Spanish and other Romance languages, cats are said to have seven lives. And in Iran, cats are also said to have seven lives.
Well,
so that's interesting.
Yeah, so seven is actually everywhere. And I was thinking about in the Revelations that it says the seven angels had the seven vials of the seven last plagues.
Mm-hmm.
How that is actually representing both the good side of the seven completion and the bad side of seven completion.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking that up because I thought, well, most of us say, oh, man, why would the angels be bringing the plagues?
Yeah, you would think that, wouldn't you?
I think
yeah.
angels are supposed to be bringing something good. So I read some things on it, and Mary Baker Eddy wrote something, and I thought this was kind of said it. The beauty of this text is, well, it says, there came unto me one of the seven angels which had the seven vials of the seven last plagues and talked with me, saying, come hither, I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. So what does that mean? So she said, the beauty of this text is that the sum total of human misery represented by the seven angels' vials full of seven plagues has full compensation in the law of love.
Hmm.
Note this, that the very message or swift-winged thought which poured forth hatred and torment brought also the experience which at last lifted the seer to behold the great city, the four equal sides of which were heaven bestowed and heaven bestowing.
Yes.
And that's really what we're saying.
That's exactly what we're saying. It's right
overcome
there.
The obstacles mm-hmm. by knowing
that's why
the
it's,
truth.
It's always right there.
Yeah.
Right in front of us at any moment.
Then there's so many representations of that in the Bible about the seven where Elias told that guy to go wash in the river seven times, which was go completely let go of all that you're holding on to in the river.
Completely.
Cleanse completely.
Purify completely.
And not hold on to the last one saying, I want this to be me. This is who I am. If I let this go, I won't be me anymore.
Right.
Just wash completely. Because at first he said, the prince said, I don't want to. Why would this prophet be telling me such a stupid thing to go down to the river and wash in it seven times? And so he didn't get healed. He had an illness. and finally said, oh, what the heck, and went down and actually did it and was healed of it, mm-hmm. because he completely let go of all that was holding him into that mm-hmm. place.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that how 7 really talks about the complete cleansing of letting things go.
Yeah.
But you've had a really, just I'm flipping to another thing because you talked about the 7 stars of Pleiades.
Mm.
And when I first met you, you had a neat little 7-star story.
Yes, it's still to me like it happened yesterday. It was just amazing. I come home one night. It's very dark. I don't know what time it was. It was fairly late. Then I come home. I lived out in the country, so there was no lights on. I get out of the car, and I happen to look up because I saw a movement overhead, and it was a very clear night. And I look overhead, and I see 7 stars circling. I mean, they're literally moving in a circle. And, you know, I did one of those cartoon with the head. I'm shaking my head. Look back up. It's still going on. I go, what am I seeing here? You know, and it was just astounding. I looked at it several times, stopped looking to look at it. It was still 7 stars circling.
So did you feel a message from that, or it was just something that moved you to a new way of thinking?
Well, when you look at 7, and then, you know, it was pretty much after that that I got into the Native teachings, and of course to them that is a big deal. Rolling Thunder used to say 7 is the big thing in all medicine and magic, and of course medicine is spiritual, and every one of them, Wallace Black Elk, 7s were big with him because he'd drink a can of 7-Up after every big, long sweat lodge thing that he did. And I mean, with that, all of them, 7 was the number. It is the number of completion, of complete completion of something. So, yeah, it was a very big deal. And then later on, I didn't notice at the time, but later on when I got into Chinese martial arts, there's a system there called the 7-star system in Chinese martial arts. So I was like, cool. Did not know that. So there's a lot of things. So it prompts that, and it always makes you... And, of course, when you think of the stars, that's complete light.
Right.
So the idea is always there, and I always see it. So complete light is 7 stars. It's circling. That's spiritual. So.
Well, what's wonderful about signs and symbols is they are always there.
Always there.
And just learning to interpret them spiritually and not holding on to the sign and symbol as if that is the reality, mm-hmm. but allowing them like road signs to point you to what is reality,
yes.
what is the big R reality. So there's one symbol we haven't talked about for the month of July, which is the animal symbol.
Oh, right. That's the heron. And the heron, you know, that's the one that the heron is the bird that taught stalking, because the heron, as you know, it'll go and it can stand for a very long time. Perfectly still. Now, isn't that very significant about coming from within?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're really, and it's like standing at the stake posture. It's like the stake and staking the dogs, but stand at the stake. Stand as the heron. Just observe. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are you sensing deep within?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
We had that wonderful symbol when we taught the 12th gathering last year.
Yeah.
And we were sitting outside, and all of a sudden, heron flew down right where we could see it. And
yeah, in the middle of that complex.
In the middle
it was a
of
hotel
a hotel complex.
Yeah.
And stood there for us for quite a long time, giving us that wonderful symbol of pausing. And yeah. I had never been that close to a heron. And the thing that really struck me was how intent it was on its intent. That it was not distracted by us
yeah.
or the waiter and waitresses, or that it was in a hotel. It was looking at the fish in the pond. Nothing stopped it.
And of course, it was aware of everything else around it.
It was aware, but we did not distract it.
It didn't. It knew what we were up to, and we were not up to anything that was endangering it. So
it was the stillest thing I've ever seen. I would have
amazing,
thought
huh?
it was a statue if I wouldn't have seen it fly down there in the first place. So
yeah.
That was a really good symbol.
Yeah,
of
super.
That pause. Pause with intent. What is your intent? And that's the other thing I think we don't do very often, is really get clear about our intent. We just move through life willy-nilly mm-hmm. instead of stopping each. Which, if we're talking about the probabilities, the way the millions and trillions of waves, in the waves, the trillions of probabilities,
mm-hmm.
if we don't stop and state and get clear about our intent or the premise, and in this in the reality shift, we're always coming from the premise that there's only one and it's absolute good. There's nothing else but that. And our intent would be to live that, understand it, take action within that. That would be our intent. But if we don't make that pause...
Then we're acting automatically. We're on autopilot, which is a, you know, it's a material world kind of viewpoint pilot thing.
Well, this past week... I did a pause that comes back to me as I think about it. We're talking about this as my sister and I were walking in the hospital doors where my dad was sick. We found ourselves breathing hard because it was one of those last days. And we both turned to each other and said, we're standing in the doorway and we're pausing. And we stood in the doorway of the hospital swing doors. We looked at each other. We paused. We both know what our intent was, and then we walked in, and that really was the beginning of what we needed to do to make him comfortable. So I'll never forget that pause because we looked at each other and said, we better pause.
Yeah.
Because we were in an environment that did not induce pausing. As we stood in that quiet our quietness, we were very good all week in that staying in the intent of what's good. We were surrounded by good the entire week. Just extraordinary, the good that we experienced during that week. But that pause, I felt like the heron. What's my intent?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
And doing it together is very good.
I'll bet.
Doing it within a group is always so much stronger than doing it alone.
Yeah.
So what last things do you want us to tell us about number 7? Because believe it or not,
we're at the end.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That went fast.
Well, you know, we ought to at least mention that lucky 7 images all derived from the dice game of craps.
Oh, that's something to remember.
Okay. No, we're rolling 7 wins. That's all there is to it. And thus the dice that roll 7 are a symbol of gambler's luck. So, you know, it's everywhere. But also, did you know 7 is a... happy number?
The happy number.
A happy number is defined by the following process. So, starting with any positive integer, you replace the number by the sum of the square of its digits and repeat the process until the number equals 1, where it will stay, or it loops endlessly in a cycle which does not include 1. Now, isn't that interesting? It keeps looping if
right.
It's not a happy number.
If it's not a happy number, which ends in 1, it loops.
It loops.
Okay.
Okay, so here's how that works. So for the number 7, you take 7 squared. That's 49. You know, 7 times 7, 49. Now you take the 4 and square it, and the 9 and square it, add them together. So 4 squared is 16 plus 81, 9 squared. That equals 97. Now you take the 9 and the 7. You square the 9, square the 7, add them together. It equals 130. Now you take the 1, square it, the 3, square it, and the 0, square it. Add them together, you get 10. Now you take the 1 and square it, the 0 and square it, add them together, you get 1.
Wow.
So 7.
7 happy number equals 1.
And isn't it interesting that there's only that, the only two single digit numbers that do that are 1
and 7. Symbolic.
There are many other happy numbers after that, but no single digits. It's 1 and 7.
Well,
so when you have completion in a good way, it starts with the 1, because if there's only 1 and you start with 1 mind and that kind of thing, well.
You would be happy. So that's a great way to end this. So going back to 1, being happy, knowing there is only 1. And it's infinite good brings happiness.
Yeah, well, we could end it with Roy G. Biv.
Oh, we should.
Because, you know, that's taking light and putting it through the prism, and it separates into 7 colors.
Oh, that's what that means?
Yeah, 7, that's the colors of the spectrum. So yeah, it's a mnemonic. Roy G. Biv is a mnemonic for the sequence of hues in the visible spectrum and rainbows in order from the longest to the shortest wavelength. So red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet.
It's all one light.
Yeah.
But 7.
Roy G. Biv, ROY, which is red, orange, yellow, G, green, Biv, BIV, blue, indigo, violet.
All right, Roy. Thanks for bringing us through the number seven back to the number one, which is all there is.
Yeah, back to number one, okay.
All right, in the center of the circle with the buzz. I'll meet you there.
Yes, and of course, what we always say, I think, is the spiritual fact precedes the symbol.
The spiritual fact precedes the symbol. Yes. So if we start with the spiritual fact, we see the symbol with increased awareness. Yes. And a higher representation of the symbol.
Yes.
That's what we'll leave everybody with.
Yes.
All right, thanks for doing it with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Albert.
That was a lot, wasn't it? How many new things did you learn? Each month for the next year, we'll bring you that month's message. So be sure to subscribe to this podcast in iTunes and at theshift.com so you will be the first to know. Why not share this podcast with your July friends? Because even though it doesn't just pertain to the people born in July, they might be delighted to know more about their month and this podcast. If you are enjoying this podcast, could I ask you to please review, comment, and give me some stars at iTunes? Can't tell you how much I appreciate it when you do. And of course, let me know what you like, don't like, what you would like to share. This is all for you. And here's your shift hack for you today. When we choose the point of view that we chose, we can then choose what we want to do or change. When we blame others or events, we are trapped in that belief system. In this month of July, set yourself free. Till next time, let's keep shifting the story together.